The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. The 21st century has introduced new norms and resources that are of immense value to businesses and their bottom line. Yet in business, we require relevance and innovation, not just more information. We need the true stories of what works and what does not work. Our program today will tell you what you need to know. The experiences, perspectives, and resources shared by Jen and her guests will make all the difference for you and your business moving forward. Now, here's your host, Jen Sabin.
Hello, hello, and welcome, everyone. Welcome to Moving Forward. This is Jen Sabin, and I, as of a few minutes ago, threw out pretty much everything that I was going to focus on today, and there's something that's really at the forefront, and I noticed it was kind of one of those things that you just can't shake off, and I think it would be of real value for us, given what this show is about. All right, so stay with me here. Now, I recently was speaking, and one of the things I was going through with this group was different quote-unquote case studies, and that sounds really formal, and I use myself and I use some clients and situations that I've personally interacted with, and it was just really rich. So I decided literally a few minutes ago, I was considering what I was going to talk about, that'll be next week, but I wanted to use this opportunity to share with you some information, some resources that I firmly believe, no kidding, done deal, will be of value to, and this is a specific group most likely that would benefit the most from this, and it's applicable. Our small businesses and solopreneurs, this is something, what we're going to discuss, certainly can be applied and is applicable to mid to large size companies, absolutely. Or and if you look at your kind of arena as or your team or your group as a company within a company, you know, as part of a team, as a holistic organization, it'll be valuable. But there's gold. And this is not ego. This is just because you're going to hear some really, really challenging times that I went through personally. Before we go into that, before we start discussing, you know, real world scenarios, not contrived, and, you know, all our guests are so authentic and so great and so generous because, you know, they're accomplished, right? Done deal. And yet they're still in the middle of their story. And And by the way, there is not one guest of these amazing guests, right? These amazing guests. You know, we've had guests who were featured on Joan Rivers, you know, how'd you get to be so rich? We have guests who have been knighted and have built multi-million dollar companies from nothing, from debt. We've had people who've taken a vision and had it be realized in existence and a known brand. I mean, just this incredible, incredibly generous community of business owners and entrepreneurs who come in here and tell the real deal. You know, they tell you the things that kept them up at night that said had them reconsider what they were doing or that they bumped up against and they didn't know if they were going to get to the other side. Like, really? Like, yes, we'll work this out. And at the same time, oh my gosh, I don't know if we're going to work this out. So with that being said, there is a resource. I've mentioned it before. I want for everyone who's listening, for everyone who has a business, who everyone who's part of a team, to make sure that you jot this down. It is the business model generation. www.business model, M-O-D-E-L, generation.com. Some of you, I can feel it. You're nodding in recognition, right? You're aware of it. You know about it. Incredible resource. Incredible resource. There is a website. There's different resources on it. There's three different books. It's just, it's rich. It's smart. And I've said this before. I think in terms of business models. I mean, growing up in the family I grew up in, you know, was involved in a lot of different businesses, and it was discussed how you make your money. So they never rested upon their laurels. And I believe it was Mary Kay Ash, who heavens we know started with $5,000 in her 40s and built a multi-billion dollar, a company that does billions in revenues with no debt. Not too shabby. And has won every award for how they conduct their business in terms of integrity and honoring values and just everything is stand up. So she used to say, laurels rested upon soon wilt. Right? In other words, don't sit on your crown. So it just never occurs to me not to think about how does your business make its money? And staying nimble, adroit, and quick, and always looking for the next opportunity. And it might not be linear. It might not be obvious. So I believe last week one of the things we discussed was trends and how to use trends. But what we're also talking about is business models and how your business makes its money. It is commonly understood in today's rapidly changing marketplace, where consumers are all about, for the most part, you know, customization in a way, not necessarily standardization. There is a what works today in terms of how you make your money may not be sufficient for sustainable growth moving forward. So it doesn't mean each day you're redesigning, but it means that you're being responsible for where you are and always, always keeping an eye to a future, the future. But it's much more than just marketing or branding. And that branding might be accessing a new market, or it might be actually the very construct of how you're business makes money. So consider this, and this is kind of a high example in the sense that this doesn't represent most of us, but there really is something for us to consider here. So years ago, for some of you, this might not even be relevant, right? Like depending on when you were born. When I was a kid, I received, when I was in university, a wonderful, very special gift of an electric typewriter. And in our house, when we used to do our papers for school, you would type them, you know, the big reports. And we didn't have an electric typewriter, so that was a really big deal. And I, you know, in our houses, you never had an abundance of paper. You used to buy these little boxes of typewriter paper, right? And those are what you used. Well, the paper industry, when computers came out, there were concerns that the paper industry was going to go by the wayside because people weren't going to be using paper anymore. Get this. People were not going to be using paper anymore, right? Because computers were very expensive. There was email that was being introduced. The paper companies, adroit, quick, redesigned who their target, you know, how they marketed, how they manufactured, how they packaged. You would never have found a household, highly unlikely you would have found a household like Main Street, USA, and I presume my family was pretty much that, with 2,000 sheets of paper, buying packages of 500 pieces of paper, printing their own invitations, photographs, etc., using more paper than ever. More paper than ever. Right? I mean, you would write your rough draft on, as a kid, you'd write your rough draft and then you'd type it for the finished copy. And sometimes you make mistakes, you'd use whiteout, you'd back, you know, you didn't go through the same quantity of paper that we go through. We're printing out everything. And before we had, it's not that we didn't print, but the consumer changed. It wasn't a home-based consumer in terms of the number of papers, in terms of the amount of paper that's used. It's amazing. Now, once again, we're seeing shifts and changing in industry, you know, from textbooks in different industry sectors, you know. So what does that mean for paper manufacturers, right? The change from the changing in the news industry in terms of magazines, periodical, the print. So I'm not going into the solutions, but I'm just pointing to they changed their business model. They changed their focus upon the consumer and how they packaged and how they sold and the vehicle that they were selling it for. So if you notice that your business is starting to stagnate or atrophy and you're saying the economy or I saturated, it could be so many different reasons. And I'm going to share some of the stories that there might be reasons that you'll find for yourself in them, you know, and I'm no exception here. It's not like I've got the, you know, I don't have the secret ingredient, but certainly I know what works and I know what doesn't work and have the track record to prove it, right? So, and I'm going to speak to you about something, a huge revelation I had. So consider your own business. How does your business make its money? Now, what's so cool about the business model generator, you can download a sheet, and on that sheet, it has great questions to ask. And you will see, in all likeliness, gaps. Or you will realize that when you first conceived of the business or at your last year when you got together and you did your strategy for the year, or if you haven't done a strategy for the year, do a strategy, you know, deciding how you were going to get where it was that you wanted to go. There were objectives identified, both qualitative and quantitative, in terms of numbers and experiential, right? Our clients have a great experience. Well, how do you measure that? How do you know that they did? And then there's how you're going to ensure that. The strategy, and then that leads to the plan, right? So when you have a good strategy, the plan is obvious. So on this business model generator sheet, now I hope some of you have gone online and you've gone to the website, and trust me, I'm not getting $1.50 for this in terms of it's just a brilliant resource. You'll look at key channels, you'll look at key supporters, you're going to look at a value added, you're going to look at at costs. You're going to look at resources, and it's going to ask you, there's little questions in there. And in looking at them and determining, well, that's obvious, or you know what, I never thought of that. It will expand your thinking. You may see some business, some pretty big gaps or some presumptions that you made and realizing that there's not a piece in your business to actually realize those presumptions. Like you're the only one that knows or thinks that. So it's a really, really good exercise, and I highly, highly encourage it and recommend it. So what is it that is the most value today, right? Our show is supposed to talk about like businesses being done differently and new resources, and certainly the business model generator is one of those resources. And it's and read the book, get on there, check it out. I promise you it'll be of value. Now, let's talk a bit about this. There is, for instance, a business, and this is something that I've been observing more and more as I've been working with a lot of early stage businesses, like really from idea to execution to realization, positive cash flow. And one of the changes I wanted to share with you came out from something, and I think you'll appreciate it. So in the growth management group, we do some programs, right? They're called Daring to Grow, and they're early stage business programs. This is not a bait and switch. This is not, you know, saying, do this program. But what's interesting is we have one program that if you're anywhere from 0 to 40,000 in terms of gross revenue, 0 to 40,000, then that's the program you go in. And it's a six-month program. And no one is permitted to do that program more than twice. So in other words, if you're starting at zero, you are ready for the next program within 12 months. And that next program is 40 to 70,000. And then the next program is 70 to 100,000. So what we're saying is for the small business owner who has an idea that we're going to have you in less than 36 months at over 100,000. But wait a minute, there are companies that are, you know, promising a million gross. Now, you know what? I've built million-dollar companies. We're talking about reality here. Now, that doesn't mean it's limiting your dream. But what I know is 3 out of 4 small businesses fail within the first 36 months. Now, your business may require more revenue. We had a woman, for example, that based upon her business and what was needed and what the market was and the funding she got, you know, in a year got to that 7-figure mark. We had someone who was a service professional business who for 2 years was spinning her wheels, essentially incurring more debt. And because what we're looking for is consistency, not one-hit wonders. And anyone can get a couple clients. Sorry. It's, you know, anyone can get a couple clients. Anyone could have, you know, half a dozen clients. But can you build on that and sustain on that and grow it? Right? Because what we're essentially saying is the next from, it goes from 100 to 250. That's another year. 250 to 500. So what we're saying, in within 60 months, you'll be at 7 figures. Now, I believe it's possible sooner. But here's what I noticed. Why did we put that no more than 2 times? Why did we put that? Because one of the things that I noticed was that people were unwilling to grow. Your business cannot grow beyond you. You then become the clog and not the cog. And what's interesting too, and really powerful, it doesn't mean they would never get there, but if that's the revenue that they're bringing in, then we need to find a way for them to bring in more revenue. Why? So that their kids can go to the university they want, so that they have what they need to retire. Doesn't mean that they're not working, still working on their business, but they're going to need supplemental income. So some of you might be saying, wait a minute, what are you talking about? We're talking about business. We're talking about the sale or purchase of goods and services with an attempt to make a profit. And if you're not growing your business, you're atrophying. So how your business makes its money is key. Because if you don't know really clearly how your business makes money and are not designing it from the optimal place for that, that honors your integrity, that honors the product and service that you want, then we're going to find ourselves in a really, really challenging place. In a really challenging place. So this got a little heavy. I didn't mean for it to get heavy. But when we come back, we're going to start talking about some real business owners and some fake business owners. But you know how some case studies are so contrived. So I'm calling them case studies, but these are men and women that I know that some of them I respect, some of them not so much. I like them all, but in terms of I like them who they are, but some of the people, what they've done and how they've handled it, I'm just, you know, not a fan. So, and what's the opportunity here? The opportunity is for you, for me, to learn from this. To say, dang, you know what? I'm doing that same darn thing. And I'm defending it. And you know what? Quite frankly and honestly, it really isn't giving me the results I want. But I'm being positional about it. And it's costing me in my business and in every other area of my life if I were to really admit it. Like, I can't even pretend that that's not true because it's an ecosystem. So when we get back, bottom line, real deal, we're going to talk about a couple of situations. And what I want for every listener listening to this is that on the other side of it, you have something that you've learned that's of value that you could use to make a difference in your business's growth, profitability, sustainability. When we come back.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. What does conscious leadership mean to you? It unites organizations instead of dividing them. By exploring commonly based business challenges, it guarantees an increase in your bottom line. Tune in to Minding Our Business, Creating a Spiritual Economy with your host, Nadine Rogers. Each week, we'll hear from business leaders and learn from their strategies. We'll talk about personal and organizational best practices that you can learn from, and we'll hear from you. Minding Our Business airs live Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Business.
Did you ever stop to think that financial health can be a lot like physical health? The financial physician, Luz Catigna, has helped people on the radio for nearly 15 years. And now he's part of the Voice America Business Channel. By using medical analogies to discuss financial solutions, Lou actually makes the process easier to understand and will help you chart your own financial fitness. Tune in to The Financial Physician live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, and on demand anytime on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello, hello, and welcome back. Welcome back to Moving Forward. We were discussing before I mentioned, if you just tuned in, the Business Generation, BusinessModelGeneration.com. I've had most of my clients, except for three, look at it, and that's because they already knew about it. It's just whether you use it or not, and I presume you will in some manner, it's a really, really good and valuable exercise and resource, a very, very good resource. Now, I was talking about, you know, us in our business, and I'm going to share a story with you, and you may hear yourself in this story. And again, I believe this is more applicable to early stage, smaller businesses than it is to more mature businesses, although there's always something to learn. And that is, so I wanted to share a story. And the story is that there was a company, and we get companies all the time, and brought to our attention. And this particular company had a great product. I mean, stellar product. And in an industry section with high margins. So made the decision to invest in this company, right? Very small amount, right? Like a small percentage of the company. And I was asked if I would be one of the people on the advisory board. And I agreed to be one of the people on the advisory board because I like the management person in terms of everything that I had seen, appreciated the model, the direction they were going, and was keen to be on, you know, contribute if I could contribute. So what happened, and this was really interesting, is so I said, okay, now one of the things we need to do is set up a regular structure for communication. Now most advisory boards don't meet pretty frequently, smaller when it's kind of grassroots. You know, it's possible to create more frequent communication. But I wanted something scheduled in time out for the year, right? Because you could, here's the thing. You can always reschedule. But if you haven't created the space and the structure for it, then there's nothing there. It's air. It's not going to happen. There's a thing I call the purse theory. And some of the women, some of the men, I don't know, but I'll say women, that was gender specific, may appreciate it, that the purse theory is no matter what the size of the purse, you'll fill it up, right? I'm sure there's a law of physics in here, nature abhors a vacuum, but whatever the size of the purse, you fill it up. If you have a very small bag, you can fill it up. If you have a large bag, instead, you'll fill it up. It's what I call the purse theory. That will the purse will be used to the capacity it has. So if you don't create space and structures and systems, and this sounds so basic, but so many people don't do this. So I had requested this. Didn't happen. I had requested that this be put down. Now, here's what's interesting. The founder of the company wanted to get all the investors who were very, very busy on a call. So the week before, sent out an email. And three people showed up. I said, my suggestion, advisor capacity, okay, send out a schedule. The third Tuesday of every month at noon. These are the dates. Send out reminders. Send it out again. Send out reminders. Put it into a contact management system. Accept decline so it shows up on their calendar. This is real basic 101 stuff. There was such a resistance to this. Why? Because I tried it and it didn't work. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, this person who had created this incredible product, who did many iterations and beta tests and this and that and worked with labs and this and that, was giving up on a key communication piece because no one came to the party, so to speak. Right? Mind-blowing. Here's what's really interesting, and this is why this is so important. If this had happened earlier, I never would have invested in the company. That's a smoke alarm. That is the smoke alarm going off. Wee, 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 right? That there was resistance to put a structure in place with a communication so that you could leverage the experience and whatever you want, you know, of those you've assembled that you to be quote unquote advisors. And by the way, advisor doesn't mean you're going to do it. It doesn't mean that you're going to act. This is not a board of directors. Very different dynamic. It's an advisory board. It's a different kind of formality. And actually being on an advisory board, you could look up the rules and the laws and legislation. In most states, in most instances, in most corporate structures, the advisory board does not, there's not liability with it. It's a different dynamic. Okay? So this person didn't choose that. So I'm curious, what structures do you have in place for communication with your team? How often are you speaking to your vendors, even with the stuff that's working? Even with the stuff that's working, because I promise there might be little stuff that could even enhance it more. Do you know what I'm talking about? I know a woman who owns a school. A learning center, a school. And the people who work there really love working there. And there's one of the classrooms where the paper towels aren't getting changed. Like when they get there, it'll stay there for a couple weeks and then this person will go and put it in. Not a couple weeks, like 4 days. I apologize. I'm exaggerating. So they run out of paper towels. The pack is there and they're pulling from the pack, but no one's putting them in the thing that they put them in for the kids. Right? Except this one teacher who works there will put it in. Right? The people who come to clean for whatever reason don't do that after, don't put it in there. I don't know. But can you see how something so crazy small, because there's no platform, and for whatever reason, this person isn't sharing it. Why? Maybe because they leave. I don't know what kind of meetings they have, right? But there's somebody else who's no longer going to do it. This is paper towels. And in an environment where people really, really enjoy where they're working, there's this little toleration, there's this little piece that I promise you starts to spread out into other areas, and it becomes something bigger. Because what happens, the nature of human beings is, and let's be real, in a different environment, in a different kind of business culture or environment, the person might say, hey, Jack, take care of this, or Susan, this really isn't working for me, or talk to their team leader or whatever. But what I want to know is there a structure for communication in place? is there a place where people can contribute, or people without any repercussions or politics or any BS, a safe space so that these things, and this might sound so incredibly minor, but I promise you, for many of you listening, there are things that aren't okay, small things that you're making okay that really do bother you. And if they weren't there, there'd be it would just be how it's supposed to be. You wouldn't even notice it after a while. Like, we're talking about paper towels here, right? So this place does everything great. And there are some tweaks that are needed. There are some things that are missing. But back to this other company, that this person who built this company to the place where it was, where they have this incredible product, was unwilling to schedule to put out there because the first time he did, the second time he did, didn't get the response he expected, is unnerving at best. Unnerving at best. Now, here's what's interesting. It doesn't mean that this person isn't good at what they do, that they're not skilled, that they're not gifted, that they're not brilliant. It's just that there's a role, there's something that the company needs for the next stage of growth. And this person is not, the one to handle that, unless, and someone's just saying, just freaking schedule the meeting, just schedule the calls, right? But the resistance to it and the problems that resulted from that, caused the company to be in a really, really precarious place. Now, here's what's interesting. For many of you who have people who are involved in your companies, maybe who have invested or whatever, there is a difference between someone who's a partner and someone who's an investor. An investor is rooting for you, and they may go above and beyond. And their role is investor, not necessarily partner. So you really want to get the distinction, and you want to understand who you're, you know, when we talk about that business model generator, you know, who the people are that are part of your business ecosystem, that are part of your business, quote, community, right? And what is the role and what is the contribution? And what is the communication structure that works best for them? I mean, are you able to say, listen, everyone, we need to have a call. Why? So that you can get the best return possible. And you'll either be there or you won't, but it's going to happen. And you start showing up and they start showing up. This isn't as trite as life. You build it, they will come. But you need to have something where you're taking a stand for something. And if there are breakdowns in communication, I promise you there's going to be major breakdowns in a business. So, you know, what are you resisting that you're not delegating or that you're unwilling to do that's pretty minor and key? Now, you may be unwilling to do all of it, but there is that thing maybe that you have been not open to consider, right? And what was interesting for me and my learning here was that I should have and did not remove myself as an advisor from that company. Why? Because there was no space to advise. There was no place to contribute. And it's not about being attached and egotistical and saying, do it my way. There was no listening. So it was in many ways kind of a sham. And, you know, this is a really, really huge lesson because I've never been in an environment where, or I've never had a client or a situation and like, wow. You know, I've been in business for almost a quarter of a century, and I've never had this happen. Right? I've never had this happen. Such a strong bait and switch. Where somebody was, you know, going one direction and then put the brakes on and wasn't willing to use the resources to change that. You know, it's just kind of fascinating. So, where are you doing something on paper that isn't really aligned? Are you part of an organization? Do you have a title somewhere? Are you, like, notice this. So there's a couple of different things going on here. And if this is about where our guests share their experience, you know, I've been blessed to have an opportunity to be on the boards of two organizations that an organization I highly value, extremely, extremely, you know, incredible honor. And it really, the difference is, you know, there, you have to show up because that's how it goes. That's what that title represents. Like, you could either be a leader by title or a leader because you're a leader. And I just chose not, because it had to be a choice at some point, because there was a point when I said, this is ridiculous. And I didn't take that next step and say, you know what? I need to be removed from that advisory board because I'm not being able to provide what the value that I can provide. And this is my integrity issue. So, lesson learned, right? Lesson learned. I let my stamp be put on something that I wasn't being able to contribute to, and my stamp was on it. That's like a designer letting their name be used by a manufacturer for a product that is way below their standards and that they're not managing quality control. Right? So take a moment and really look at your business, because I have to tell you, this thing, and this happened this year, had me reevaluate all of it. All of it. So where is the opportunity for you to sit back and look at and say, okay, is there anything going on that's a really good idea and maybe I'm sincere about, but I'm not really doing squat about? Let it go. Or do something about it. Now, this sounds so trite. Oh my gosh, Jen, you're on such a little soapbox. But consider, really, really, right? Like, how ridiculous. I'm on an advisory board and there's actually no structure in place for the advisory board to meet, to offer advice, random, ad hoc, you know, and the advice, right? Let's create a system for communication with your investors and key people, you know, even if it's a monthly call, even if it's 30 minutes, send out a monthly email or a weekly update, whatever it is, so that you're in communication, so that people are current, so that you can leverage and capitalize on the resources you have in your organization. And people who believe in you, who are rooting for you, right? For this, you, when I say you, I mean the company, right? And the person who created it. Go, win. You know, get the gold. Absolutely. There's something really poignant about that. Right? It's like the kid with his face pressed up against the window and all the bake, you know, and all the sweets and pastries are inside, or it's the toy store, and they're just like looking through the window and they want to go in and be part of it, right? Join the party. So what are your structures for communication? Where are you involved in something, but you're not really involved in it? So what had you even want to do it in the beginning? Is there something that's bankrupt? And, you know, is it an energy drain? Is it a pull? Are you creating something that's so not aligned that you don't even realize the potential repercussions? So there's kind of like an opportunity to do accounting, not just the numbers, though. I'm not talking about the numbers. I'm talking about where you're putting your time, energy, and resources. This is kind of heady, I know. When we come back, we're going to talk more about stuff that doesn't work. And from that, we're going to get to what does work. And we're not going to leave anyone with what doesn't work. but we're going to talk about some things that don't work and what does work when we get back.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Are you a decision maker in your organization, a mid-level manager, or a team member? Stepping Stones to Everyday Success with host Kimberly Stewart is a program designed to provide you with tidbits and tools you need to achieve results no matter where you are in your organizational structure. Interaction is key, and you'll have opportunities to share your ideas, comments, and questions. Listen to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success, live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Is your business model robust enough? In today's ever-changing business environment, people are working to transform themselves, their futures, and their business. Tune in to Business Reinvention with your host, Nancy Lynn. To stay ahead of the game in business, you have to constantly reinvent yourself and your organization. With Nancy's experience and that of her guest experts, you'll learn from stories of inspiration, innovation, and forward thinking. Listen for Business Reinvention, live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back, everyone. Got a little heady last segment before we took our break. So what we're talking about is really, and I realize this, is what doesn't work and what does. And in our last, you know, there was a company that contacted me, and they were looking for a bridge loan. They were looking for a short-term loan so that they could meet some expenditure needs for manufacturing so that they could bring their product out 2013. Now, here's what's really interesting. I had been on a call where this company had was looking for some input and support with some other professionals, right? Like, so it was almost like a dog and pony show kind of thing. And there, you know, they were looking in terms of raising capital, and out of it, they realized that there was the opportunity not to raise capital, but to loan. Now, once upon a time, in the best of all possible worlds, I'm dating myself like I did before when I said I had a typewriter and then an electric typewriter in university, is that, you know, once upon a time in a land far, far away, banks were lending institutions, and they would lend businesses money or lines of credit, etc. And there's still other resources such as factoring and things like that. One of the things that is most important, other than like kind of credit, reputation, business plan, is purchase orders or commitment letters, right? If you want to get money, people want to make sure that there's someone who's going to purchase or utilize your product. Now, there are situations, you know, some e-commerce dynamics, some you know, different space, you know, Silicon Valley, very different. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking consumer goods here. Now, with that being said, so there was this call, and the call was maybe 4 weeks ago, 3.5 weeks ago, right? Something like that. And it was literally 72 hours before that phone call started coming in. Can you? Will you? Did you like the terms? Da, da, da. There weren't conversations after the call. Now, notice where, you know, there's something to learn here, and there's something to be sensitized to. Everyone has their own style. We all have our own style. But are there places where you're not asking for what you want, or you're waiting and you're hoping that someone will offer? There's being strategic. There's using discernment. There's knowing your customer. There's the dance. There's enticing people. There's different things. And then there's a place where you need to be the one saying, "Hi, it's me. Let's talk. Here's what we need. Here's what I need." To ask for what you want, to make the request. People will either accept or decline. If you're sitting in the space of hoping and waiting, and it's not strategic, that's not like it's a strategy. What it really is a compensation. I mean, it's a strategy for being safe versus a strategy in terms of, I know this particular person and they like to wait until the last minute and they want to be able to feel like they're getting the best deal possible, et cetera, da 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 da. Right? Like if you want to sell your house for $450,000, most people don't offer their house, their apartment for $450,000. They offer it for $469,000 or something like that. Right? There's being strategic and smart, and they know that, you know, they'd anything under 450 isn't acceptable, so they don't just ask 450. If they ask 450, someone probably lowball. I mean, there's being strategic, there's being smart about things. Yet there's the place where we let fear or our concern about other people's perception of us, right? That we don't get to learn the lesson. We don't get to build our confidence. We don't get to build our esteem. We don't get to grow. Instead, we sit in this monologue, and then we find ourselves, you know, interestingly enough, this individual would have been able to secure the funds they needed if, now this didn't happen, so obviously it's all conjecture. If it hadn't have been until the 0 hour. They had lined it up and said, it's, you know, this situation. And here's the deal. So I'm curious, are there things that you're waiting to ask for in your business? Are there clients that you're not going out after? So maybe there's a client that you're not going after because you're not ready for. Well, then who do you need to be going after to get ready for it? You know, people don't take their shows to Broadway without typically taping it on the road, doing rehearsals, getting feedback, etc., right? It's not like, okay, let's invest all this money, curtain up, right? Take it on the road, refine, tweak, notice reactions. So if you want to go, and there's nothing wrong with going, like, go for it. Go for the, like, if you're going for that client, that manufacturer, that B2B, well, whoever and whatever it is, that big game, where do you need to go first so that you're ready for that? Do you need to play college ball so you can go right to the majors, or you expect to be drafted ready out of high school? Right? There's a piece where there's a growth process, and sometimes we need to be willing to learn, to screw up, to build to something. You don't just say, I'm going to run an Ironman or I'm going to do a marathon. If you haven't done it yet, if all you've done is a 5K, you say you're going to do it and then you work towards doing it. Right? If you want to make a pitch to the biggest VC in terms of funding or whoever it is, are you going to go to some of the local dog and pony shows? Are you going to practice it in front of a few people? Are you going to get a bunch of no's so that you can get the yeses? Because if you're not getting no's, if you're not willing to get no's, then you're not going to be most likely be put in a position to get the yeses. Now, some people, and there are many people who would completely, 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 completely disagree with me. But here's what I know. You can't make the shot if you don't shoot. And if you shoot, you can miss. The more, in some ways, the bigger you're willing to fail, the more opportunity you have to succeed. What do I mean by that? I didn't say quit, be a failure. That's something else. That's BS. I'm not talking about being a failure. I'm talking, are you willing to fail? Are you willing to have an objective, something you want, and go for it and potentially not get it? We don't set our minds up that way. We're not designed like, oh, gee, I hope I don't get it. But only in the going for it will you know if you can get it. Right? Does this make sense? You shoot the basket, you want it to go in, the probability is it's going to go in, and yet, once you shoot it, it may or may not go in the basket. One of the things, though, is the more frequently you shoot from different places, the more you practice, the more you experience it, ideally, the more refined your skill is. The more you now know how to handle that situation, which is why people get groomed, which is why we used to have apprenticeships, right? Now, this doesn't mean that there's not the person who's going to go say, you know what, I want it, I'm calling up the president, we're going for it, we are unstoppable, we're going to make this happen. You know, let's go, I want to sell, I'm starting a realty company and we're going to sell, you know, eight-figure homes. Because it's going to take just as much work to sell an eight-figure home as it is going to be to sell the six-figure home. And the commission's higher and the upside is higher. Right? I mean, obviously, you know, think about attorneys. Sometimes the first case is a really big case if you're a litigator. But you have to have that first case. Think of medical professionals. There's not a profession in where you don't kind of earn your wings. Where you have to, you know, no one sets it up. No one wants to not fulfill on something. No one wants to get the no. That's not what it's about. But we're not going to get the yeses unless we do it. Now, here's what's really interesting. I happen to know from one other person who was asked also to be part of a consortium for the bridge loan that they would have definitely done money, but it was so close to the wire. And the question was, why did this individual wait? Well, they were still hoping to raise capital. Yeah, but why didn't they line us up? Why didn't they get everything ready to go? And then even if they raise the capital, just pay it off with a small interest. It's still cheap money. What's your plan B? So there's another piece here, and I'm going to use this before we wrap up because this is key. What are your plan Bs? Do you have a plan B? There is not – now, I know I've spoken before about burn your ships. Right? But there is always a plan B. Plan B doesn't mean you're planning to fail. It means you're planning well. You get on a plane, you expect to land, and you also look to see where the emergency exits are. Everyone that's on that plane, the pilot, the flight attendants, they want to land. They're rooting for it. They're confident they're going to land. And they tell you where the exits are so you know. That's a plan B. Nobody wants the plan B. And if something is to go awry with plan A, because stuff happens, then it's key and critical and important to have a plan B. This doesn't mean that you're not confident, that you don't believe, that you're giving up on something. This is really good strategy. This is why, you know, this is kind of like what a financial advisor called asset allocation, right? So This is what we're looking at. And what if there's a delay somewhere? How are we going to handle that? Oh, well, we could do this, 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 and this. Good thing we thought about it. Why? Because there was a storm off the North Sea, or there was a labor strike, and we found ourselves backed up. But you know what? We'd already had relations with another manufacturer, so we were able to ramp up and fill our orders. We had cash. We keep a certain amount of cash reserves for emergency situations. What's your plan B? Whew, that's a good one. So I wanted you to think about it. So for this week, for those who are part of our Moving Forward community, we're walking away with a lot of stuff today. Not some happy stories. Doesn't mean they're not going to have a happy ending because they're in the middle of their stories, right? But do you have a plan B? are you waiting and hoping in a way that's really more about being tired or scared? Are you using the resources they have, and are you waiting until you're in dire straits or you're up against a wall to reach out? Or are you building communication and relations so that you could just pick up the horn? I talked about this once in regards to having a relationship with a business. You have a, wherever you are in your business, have a good relationship with a bank or bank, a bank, some people in that bank. Why? Because when you need it, that's not when you want to be building the relationships. When you have that big contract or you have that opportunity and you want to capitalize on it, you want to be able to pick up the horn and know what your options are, know the process, know the timing, and not trying to be cultivate the relationships then. You want to be able to call them and say, Susan, Jack, Henry, Sally, guess what? I've got great news. We're really excited about it at our company. Again, I said at the beginning, this was for smaller companies because this is usually where you see it, and it can really impact the health of the company. And larger companies, as Chrissy Benoit once said, when you've got a lot of cash flow and you've got deep pockets, stuff gets absorbed. You don't recognize the impact in the same way. But in smaller companies and earlier stage companies, the stuff we're talking about today, it can be lethal. So, but I promise you it all has a happy ending. You have a plan B. What's your structures for communication? Are you using the resources? Are you building relationships with the professionals that you need so that, or that you believe you will need at some point so that when you do, they're lined up? That's it for today. Everyone, thank you so much. Please continue. Send your comments, thoughts, opinions, stories, resources. www.businessgenerationmodel.com. Check it out. This was Jen Sabin on Moving Forward. Make this week a Moving Forward week. Take care, everyone.
Thank you again for tuning in to Moving Forward. Please join Jen Sabin again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Make your week a Moving Forward week.